evolving the Nimitta like a Pokemon. So the idea of the Pokemon evolution came up at one point in discussing the monsters that people see. They go through a cycle or changes, but we also applied it to the Nimitta. It goes through a sequence. I saw the sort of teardrop shape and rings appear around it, and then it diffuses out into a color wash. So one thing that's really good to do is just have this kind of curiosity and awareness of the evolution of a Nimitta, of that sequence, and look for as much fine detail in it as you can. Finding your color.
Nearly everybody will eventually notice that they seem to have a color. Not everybody, but most people, that they see much more easily. Common ones are blues, purples, reds, but occasionally other ones as well. It's just very normal to have your color, and early on, particularly if you find that you have a color that's easier for you, focusing on that color and developing it is generally much easier than trying to make it some other color. So I think embracing natural strengths early on is really good, and just going with your color can be a real help in the practice, and recognize that that's just the way people are built.
And it also relates to what type of wizard you are.
I just realized that after discovering that I was a green and somewhat blue wizard here on retreat, that was also the same color as the Magic the Gathering deck that I played as a child. So that might be an indicator of what kind of wizard you are. Sorry, I thought I'd peek out there.
There's like this roll that's coming out in you specifically for this that's hilarious. Am I the only one experiencing this?
Yes. Gradually extending the Nimitta time, but not linear. So over time, I found that the Nimitta would last longer, be more clear, and have more fine details. And as the retreat went on, sometimes it wouldn't be there, sometimes it would. But when it was there, day by day, it'd be a little bit longer. None of this is linear, of course. It goes in cycles, ups and downs.
I initially thought that the goal was to build the visuals out from the Nimitta, that would expand into mandalas and landscapes and that kind of thing. So it was helpful to realize that it was okay just to have the Nimitta in your line of sight, but be able to watch the landscapes or other visuals develop behind it. And it was just kind of like an introduction or training wheels while the visuals generally built around it.
Motion.
Noticing the motion of objects is really important. That's not only noticing the characteristic of impermanence, but the visual system likes to track motion, so anything moving is more likely to hold attention. And even things that seem to be really still may actually be delicately moving or flickering or shifting or something. Things can gently swirl, rotate, move closer, move farther away, wash around, do various things. And all of those motions are extremely useful things to notice, and actually, curiously enough, are showing you the impermanence characteristics, sort of sneaking in a little bit of vipassana in a way that doesn't feel very vipassana-ish, but is actually a basis of insight and very, very deep insights. So just watching the change and flux and shimmer of objects is an extremely good idea.
I found that I was getting photorealistic imagery with colors fully integrated to them within the first few days, but then I stopped getting that later in the first week, and I gradually realized that's because I incline more towards emphasizing motion and speed, and that it was actually going too fast for the photorealism to kind of attach itself to. So in the second week, I discovered slow-mo, where I could actually, just like in a film that suddenly shifts into slow motion, get into the slow motion state with the visuals, and then at that point, the photorealistic imagery could attach itself to the motion again, and then I got into some really interesting places.
One thing I noticed with motion is when I looked at color washes or light patterns flickering, I would notice that it's not actually the light or the object flickering, it's my attention flickering. I would see the pulses of my attention come up, which was a very cool thing to see.
I also had moments discovering that I felt my body was moving with the visuals, and I didn't know if I was still or not, and so kind of got caught in this, wait, am I is my head moving? My eyelids moving? Is my body swaying? I couldn't always discern whether it was just the visuals or my body was moving with the visuals.
Near and far.
I didn't discover color in my visual field until I learned to focus on the near and found that all of the black and gray visuals would be taking place somewhere in the distance. But if I changed my focus to a little closer in front of my face, there would be what began as like concentric rainbow rings of color emanating out from whatever structures I was looking at. And I always found that that's where the color was coming from.
And playing with far, I managed to get the star field visualized through a structure again, which ended up, rather than looking at the distance of the Nimitta or just the screen sort of right behind it, just looking as far off in the distance as I could. And I would find that the visuals sort of would reorient to that kind of focus. And then I would eventually get these sort of three-dimensional kind of almost look like irregular, like screens made out of stone or earth or something, that on the other side of them was the star field that was moving by fast, like one of those time-lapse cameras facing the night sky and with the stars moving by it. And it was just delightful. And I think playing with near and far can show you extremely useful things. Also, near can show you that there's actually a lot of shimmery, irregular space that may be making your images on what we might call the second screen or the primary screen that we're looking at most of the time appear pixelated or grainy. But if you actually look near to that, you know, a few inches from your eyes or the space in between, you can start noticing that a lot of that graininess is actually due to subtly ripply things that are happening in the space between you and what looks like a grainy screen. And so those are the kinds of insights that you can get by changing your focus.
Looking at depth and the suggestion to look at the space between whatever I'm seeing and me sort of added a third coordinate, which is incredibly helpful. Portals and transitions.
We touched on this a little bit already, but the idea that when I felt like I was staying with the experience and then it stopped, that stopping sometimes I'd feel a slight bit of defeat, or that I needed to restart again, whereas being suggested the idea that actually what I was experiencing as stopping was actually a leap, a portal to reopen to what is actually the next step. It's part of the seamless transition, and I was creating a division in something that was already seamless and could be experienced more as a portal instead of something stopping me.
I noticed that transitions often included a shift in the geometry, and it was helpful for me to think in terms of planes, where it might start with the Nimitta being a dot of zero dimensions, and then a tunnel representing like a line, and then a wheel like a flat 2D plane, and then a spherical 3D kind of object, or just the general sense of curvature of space.
And I've noticed that in some of my sequences, it will actually be almost a built-in feature that at certain points, I'm just going to space out a little bit, and then my mind will reconfigure on the other side into some different state, and that state is a progression, and that spacing out seems to be part of what the mind essentially needed to do in order to reconfigure on the other side in a different state in some other mode. And so embracing some of that and just recognizing that some of those transitions seem to be a crucial part of the thing, well, has been very helpful in the practice, and letting some of those just happen the way they did. Some of my more powerful experiences actually would sometimes come after periods which would seem like not very good practice or mind wandering, and all of a sudden, wow, because I was letting go and not applying that sort of effort, the mind could suddenly surprise me with what it was capable of doing.
Just to add to that sometimes I would find I hadn't spaced out for a while and I could intentionally space out, and that actually seemed like quite a sensible thing to do occasionally, was just go, okay, let's just loosen up a bit, and it worked several times.